hoping to see Big Boss outside playing for a good dish. I should have made it 15 minutes saying that it was just finger lunch. Ladies and gentlemen, let's proceed. Sam is going to take us through public employment services, and Sam, if you could also address the issues that have already been raised. Is the presentation up? Thank you. Over to you, Sam. We'll be looking at.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Member. The presentation will cover a number of areas. I'm going to skip through a number of sections and then go straight to a number of key issues. I think slide number 3 gives you a sense in terms of the organizational structure. I have three chief directors under me, one looking after employer services, the other one works seeker services, and the third one looking at supported employment enterprises, which are the 13 factories that we have across the 13, the 9, I mean 8 provinces. We don't have a factory in Mpumalanga, and we are almost at the final stages of filling the CEO's position. The slide number 4 gives you a sense of our budget. We have a total of 556 staff members. 4 employees, 8 are in the labor centers and provinces, who else at head office. Our budget allocation there at 611 million, which is divided into 327 on compensation, 40 million on goods and services, and the transfers and subsidies amount to 241, mainly to a program that we have, which is called Designated Groups Special Services. These are people that are, it's subsidies that we give to 10 companies that employ people with disabilities. We retain them every 3 years. We subsidize every company, that is every person, to the tune of 800 rand, and the company pays the difference. And the whole idea is to make sure that we integrate people with disability into formal employment and take them on the social grant system. The second set of transfers goes to supported employment enterprises. In the first one, we have about 956 people that are participating in the program. In the supported employment enterprise, it's about 1,250 people that are employed in the 13 factories. The third one is Productivity South Africa, which is going to make a presentation. And then we also have the UI and the compensation. Now, Honorable Members, UI and compensation fund are standalone bodies that perform their functions in terms of the relevant statute. However, within government, because government does not contribute to the UI, they've made a provision, and you will see an increase in the allocation from just a mere 1,000 to more funds allocated, because public servants are now covered under the unemployment insurance fund. So those transfers would normally come via PERS, and we will reimburse the unemployment insurance fund for the payments that they would have effected. With the compensation fund currently for public servants injured or those suffering diseases, because government doesn't pay the COIDA subscription, they give us an allocation depending on the claims that we are getting in the public sector, and last year this increased tremendously. Our purpose for existence is to provide, slide number five, assistance to companies and workers to adjust to changing labor market conditions. And we do that through the slide six, the various chief directors and their functions are outlined. I did say in terms of legislation on slide seven, gave you a brief history of how the various acts, and we still have these pieces of legislation that evolved in the various administrations, the discriminatory practices and so on. But we also sit with a number of conventions. Now, I thought there was an honorable member who asked us about employment policy. Now, if you look at some of the conventions that we have there, some of them go back to 1964, 48, 88, 78, and so on. They still remain relevant, and most of the countries have based their legislations on some of them. The provisions of our Act cover certain aspects. And in our case, apart from running, I mean, the Employment Services Act, there was a lot of work that was done to align a number of provisions of those that act with a number of ILO conventions. Like I said, there are certain aspects that still remain in force, but regulated under the Skills Development Act, even with the transfers. The applicable sections of the Immigration Act, as we work with Home Affairs, and I'll come to some of those aspects. Slide number eight just gives you an indication, because part of our function is to register work seekers' opportunities and do the placement. Now, in the MTEF period that ended March 2019, the 5-year period before the current administration, just to give you a sense of the registration, 3.6 million work seekers were registered, with 1 million provided with counseling, and we just had just below, slightly above half a million opportunities registered, and placed only 109,000 workers. And there are a number of issues and challenges that leads to the extent of placement that I'll touch on later. But amongst them has to do with the relevance and the fact that the kind of people that employers want, we may not necessarily have them in our skills base, but in some cases it has to do with other issues that I'm going to address in the immigration. Slide number nine is just giving you a sense of the work that we've done during the current financial year. And slide number 10 is giving you a sense in terms of the subsidies to designated organizations. Like I said, we have 10 organizations. We take them on a rotation basis. For 3 years, we subsidize the three organizations. At the end of the third year, we issue an advert. We go through a screening process. We take 10 companies that we give subsidies to on condition employing people with disabilities. And you can see the number that we have currently, around 958. It fluctuates as people leave due to attrition, death, and so on. The challenges that we have, just a sense, has to do with the placement of work seekers in the various jobs. And this has to do with the current economic climate, the mismatch of skills. In some cases, it's reluctance of the employers and so on. We were asked to now, as part of the happening really has to do with how we coordinate and get support and make sure that all our efforts complement each other, because within the private sector, the public sector, we have all sorts of employment interventions, and as a country, we have not been able to put all those reports under one place, and there are mechanisms that we've been directed to implement so that we can begin to close that gap, to deal with duplications of interventions, and we are working with the PMO, which is the Program Management Unit in the President's Office, to try and coordinate those interventions. Now, honourable members raised a number of questions relating to employment and migration. Now, one of the, we have been given three major policy interventions to work on. The first one relates to the employment policy in line with the Employment Convention. And we are working with the ILO, and currently we are at the stage of employing the necessary organization that is going to assist us in terms of the various steps guided by the ILO. The ILO has got a very good guide on how you go about formulating an employment policy, avoiding pitfalls, making sure that you consult extensively and getting the buy-in on the policy and the steps to do the implementation. The second big one is on the labor migration policy. Now, honourable members raised a number of questions, and I just wanted to amplify some of the things that we are having to confront in that area. Because when you deal with migration, there are a lot of issues. We have a big problem of asylum seekers. Asylum seekers are in line with the Asylum Seekers Act, a backlog of about 5 years. And that act says if you come and apply for asylum status and you are not processed within a year, you have the right to work. Secondly, we don't have camps in South Africa. So anyone with a paper that has applied while they are waiting to be processed, they work and they are migrants. We have special dispensations. Special dispensations were extended to Lesotho, Zimbabwe, and Mozambique, where Home Affairs just said, look, you are in the country, just register, and then we'll give you an LDZ so that we can recognize, we can document you and all that. And the Minister of Home Affairs was on TV talking about the deadlines and what is it that we're going to do in case people don't get to renew. You then have the irregular, which is people who skip the fences. And then you have people who come in through what we call intra-company visas. If Mercedes-Benz South Africa has a plant in South Africa, DTI facilitates those people to come in. Now, you have new investment. New investments are where an investor comes in with a certain amount of money. And that is the only time that the Home Affairs regulation allows that new investor to bring in at least 40% of staff to remain in the country for a period of 5 years, and 60% must be local. So this 60-40 thing applies only to new investment. But we also have a challenge in that DTI has put new investment at 1.5 million South African rand. Now, anyone who would come into the country with 1.5 million, although the amount has been reviewed and set up and increased high, those people were allowed to come in and given either naturalization, recognition, etc. And then you also have a big problem of army in, you know, you have a lot of charismatic churches and all those things. They come in with those pennants, and once they come in, then they go into the labor market and all that. Now, we have heard, and there are also a number of other three things that you must also take into consideration. The Global Compact on Migration, which is an international protocol on how you manage migration. Secondly, the SADC instrument that all the African countries have agreed to on the free movement of people, that is within the African Union. And within the SADC, the 14 member states, there's also a SADC protocol on the migration management within the region. Now, when we deal with these issues, we have to combine all those things so that we find ourselves in line with all those protocols and all that. And what have we done? Honorable members, the Home Affairs Department was saying we may have made a mistake. And we did that because we were under pressure to issue permits for people to go in and out. But those things were labor matters, and without labor giving us guidance, we agreed that we may have created a problem, and when there are xenophobic problems, etc., that's why we have this problem. So they then tasked the ministers of labor within the SADC region to say, come with a labor migration management policy and make sure that it is harmonized across the region. And since they've done that, we have worked during the last year to come up with a draft labor migration policy. That policy, honorable members, begins to address a number of things. For instance, this issue of special dispensation. You will recall that under the previous, or pre-1994, the agreements with Zimbabwe, with Lesotho, with Mozambique, were seen as labor reserve centers, especially within the mining sector. People, the government of the Republic then gave the right to those countries the right to bring in their citizens and gave them exemptions like taxes. Some of the Mozambican workers in the country don't have to pay taxes and all that. You know, you find all these discrepancies and so on. And some of the agreements were found to be not consistent with our current constitution. And they must be revoked. But those countries are holding on to them because they are part of their revenue stream. And they want the extension of some of those things. So we had to find a way that says, how do we deal with these issues? In a manner that will not see the collapse of the economies, but also deal with the problem of unemployment in the country. Now, we commissioned a research on that issue, and it has made a pronouncement on the asylum, on the special dispensation, etc. And this Friday, I will be chairing a session of all government departments that have got stake in migration. As you may know, that in the committee chaired by the Deputy President, Defence and Police, Home Affairs, Intelligence, COCTA, because of the communities, etc. We all have health and all that. We have an issue or a stake in relation to this migration because it is causing problems everywhere. Not only in the labor market, it's in all those areas. So we will be consulting with them on our part on how we intend solving some of the issues that they've raised. Now, going forward, it may mean that the draft policy that we have, we can turn it into a green paper that we'll publish to get extensive comments. And secondly, translate into a white paper and a draft bill that will go to cabinet and more than happy to share with you some of the issues that are coming up. I can see the interest in the private members bill, but I'm sure you will also appreciate the massive information that is also aligned to the protocols and all the other areas that we have worked on. And I would also urge the committee to consider a joint session with the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, because they are dealing with the amendment to the Immigration Act 2002. And part of the things they wanted to remove was this thing that relates to labor, to say, labor, you give us guidance so that we don't contaminate our legislation. The trade and industry give us other areas. So even within the trade and industry, they will have to make pronouncement, because as you advocate for free movement of goods and services, you also unintentionally or have other unintended consequences in other areas. Education is the same. Because of the scarce skills thing, it's one thing to get scarce and critical skills, but at the same time, you have brain drain. Once other countries recruit in Australia and London, all our skilled people to work in those areas without paying any cent, or us recruiting people from the African continent to come in without reimbursing them, we create other problems. So it's how you strike some of those things. Now, it may be that between ourselves and Home Affairs, we will be able to say, given the two processes, the Home Affairs Labour the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee deal with this aspect, and then the Portfolio Committee on Labour, we will appreciate that you assist us in either coming up with a piece of legislation that will regulate the aspect that I've already mentioned. The employment policy, obviously, the President is on our case, given the problem of unemployment, the repositioning of the department. We have to come up with that policy quite quickly. The last one is on the schemes, which is covered in our Act, and it has to do with how the department utilizing, as per Section 12 of this Act, some of the resources, reinvesting them with the intention of preventing unemployment. Remember, the UIF and the compensation fund are part of our reactive intervention when people have lost employment either due to retrenchment, injuries, or work-related diseases. So the pressure is on us to say, how do we become proactive using some of the resources that you have so that you create employment and you prevent people from landing in the UI and the compensation. And the schemes are precisely about intervening so that we can deal with unemployment. And I think I'll stop at that point. The supported employment enterprises, I think these are just factories that employ people with disabilities who find it difficult to work in a normal environment, and they are part of our division. I will clarify if there are further questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks,
Ken.
Chair, are you going to lead?
Yeah, I just want to say, because in listening now, it's dawning that as much as the matter is mooted, but it needs us to be emotionally sound. Progress to move. Because if we don't do that, maybe the unintended consequences will be that we will then be mudding the whole situation. I'm raising that, Chair, because it's now for the first time that we get formally move from Jay up in the Limbai, who is in the Zinzwai, who is in the Limbai. fact, these are the processes, and which then will necessitate which, what then a committee will have to do. And I think I must respond and appreciate that. But my major concern as the program director is that in between this whole process, the green paper, the white paper, high level of unemployment is going up. Our people are impatient, are irritated, are agitated. They perceive us as lawmakers and government as being insensitive. In between ourselves as politicians, we are fighting among ourselves. Because we've got different views. What is it that you think is to be done? Because our people, truly and honestly speaking, let alone that they want them to deliver, they want work, but they bend a clinic, that is another. But how then do you speak? It reminds me when we were shot once, we were told that if you dread a strike for more than 5 days, when it hits a worker that is not going to have money to buy milk for his or her child, he's no more interested in that strike anymore. Because you can see that it goes beyond 7 days. It is a serious challenge, and you then find that you within yourselves as workers, you are fighting. There are those that want to go back, there are those that, as you know, you are selling out. But in this context is that our people are hungry. And the unfortunate part is that majority of those people that are hungry are our people. And our people, African, black in particular, we are staying there, we are staying with them. Some of them are our children who are graduates, with an example, who are not unemployed. That's so the question, why I'm trying to, the question that in between those processes, because we can't say don't do that, in between that, what is it that you think as lawmakers and as public representatives, when we're in our constituency areas, we can speak with one voice in acknowledging the challenge that now it's hitting us. We're always accused that we blame the previous regime. It's not about that, it's about acknowledging that for some time this was planned, that we will be here in this country and the black people will be in this situation. But we've got a responsibility that we are to change and working together. So, without labeling, too much a concern in between that period, because we are going to be faced with a problem. The last one is that with Home Affairs, because I don't know, maybe when we have joint meetings, those are the things that we will really appreciate and look into them. I didn't hear you mentioning in committees the small business. I don't know whether I missed that. You Home Affairs, intelligence, this, COFTA, education, but small business. Is it it's take a mistake, because I do think that it is one department that is also supposed to be part of that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Program Director. Just to add on what the Chair has said here, the coordination and collaboration as an economic cluster in relation to employment in particular. The DFI's roles in the job creation. In our constituencies, we meet with various sectors. People would say we have made an application for funding of a manufacturing plant in one of the SEZ. It's 2 years now. No response. Your IDC, your trade and investment department, we have invested about 10 million in acquiring and putting up the infrastructure. Now, we want to acquire operational machines, which cost us about 50 million. Therefore, we have made an application of 80 million from the department and or the DFI. Nothing has come up. The 10 million that we have invested there, we have not realized the return of it because of non-assistance from the government. Now, as a department, is there a way of how you discuss issues that relate to operational matters as far as funding of applicants to make sure that we speed up these processes? Secondly, I've heard as well those who are involved in agriculture that there are a number of commercial farms that are up for sale from the private sector, or from private individual farmers, but the department is not assisting or is not coming to the party as far as the acquiring of those farms, which are commercial, they are financially viable. Reasons for selling or those who have been occupying them are the known things that are in the public domain as far as expropriation without compensation. So the only way that they could then find an income is to sell these properties to aspiring farmers who are looking for business opportunities. How is the economic cluster dealing with these issues to try and address challenges that might not have been foreseen or are as a result of some of the policies that we are taking initiative of? At the same time, looking for government leverages to deal with these issues. That's the problem.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Sir?
Maybe let me start with the last one. Yes, the department is part of the economic cluster. We are 11 government departments. We discuss a range of things, whether it's policy, legislation, things that impact on our operations, the things that other government departments may do that may impact
foreign ministers will then go into detail on the various aspects on agriculture, on energy and all that, because there was an agreement on the different lines. I'm not the right person to make a pronouncement on those issues. The relevant people will do that. But we have done the framework and coordination very well. The Honourable Chairperson raised a number of issues on what as yourself should be doing. Now, I guess for us is to give you the picture of what is happening, but I already made a suggestion on the meeting the Immigration Committee. But I think we can also assist by getting all these protocols or work with the research unit to make sure that you get access to these documents, the protocols and all that. Because once you familiarize yourself with all those, even the draft policy when it comes to you, you will know exactly what informs it, where, which direction we are going and all that. And that will also assist. Let me also say something, I think one honorable member did talk about this issue of being xenophobic, and Ms. Miva here did tell you about the joint operations that we conduct. Now, honorable members, we are in a predicament here. We asked our principals to allow us to do the work and do it quietly. Because if we do our work and you publicize it, we end up with other problems. For instance, when we conduct joint inspections, we conduct them and we are dealing with you. You can see the issues around trucks, the roadblocks that we have. We don't have to publicize that we are going to conduct roadblocks. We have our processes that we plan, and you will come across some roads. We will inconvenience you, but we are, it's part of doing our natural kind of operation, and we thought that the publicity of those things is part of the problem. Rather allow us to do our work in denying the laws. Until the laws are changed, we do them silently. And I think ever since we started doing a lot of work, you may not see it on TV or newspapers, but we believe that the work on the ground is telling things. You can see the number of trucks went down, it has gone down, all those things because of that approach. You may have seen in Deep Road last time, there was a lot of things. Home Affairs is silently just going in and dealing with people. You arrest, people are breaking the law, whether they are illegal or irregular, they don't have papers. You just do your work like you would do it in Zimbabwe, and then you take people to the Netherlands and send them back home quietly. You don't have to call a press conference because you are implementing the law, and police and immigration officers, including our inspectors, are doing that work silently. The issue, Honorable Chairperson, around demarcating and that, we discussed it partly in the immigration draft policy. There are constitutional issues that the draft policy is pointing to. However, we have allowed also the small business department, because they are also generating a draft bill. If you go to Namibia, to Zimbabwe, it is true that there are those legislations that demarcate sectors such as hairdressing, other shops and all that to nationals. If you are a foreign national, you can't do those things. So when our Minister for International Relations and Cooperation met with the various embassies during the height of those xenophobic kind of era that we had, these were some of the things that were raised, and the small business is good.
us.
That they are filthy and confiscating from the better half is massive. You just do your work, hit them hard where it matters most, less media coverage, and then you begin to have results. Because the minute you publicize this, you now run into trade relations problems and all that. So these are some of the things that are happening, and if honorable members want to participate, that is why Ms. Milo was saying, we would appreciate if you can allocate your time when we do some of the joint operations. You come in and you see how they are done and what we do in those areas. And we won't have media there, unfortunately, for this conversation. Thank you.
This workshop, among other things, the workshop cannot make a political movement. It's a process that is going to enable us to understand the sector more. And it's a process that is also going to us interact with the department without any fear or favor being accused of being. All these processes that you are raising, I don't think it's a problem. A fundamental problem is that person who is staying in Sweden, those people that are in Nanda, those people that are in Verbe, that have been applying for assistance, delayed by the various departments, not even being communicated with, those communities who can find work, but a hotel that is situated in their town, a garage that is situated in their area is employing foreign nationals. Now, that's why my question was, if I go to Truth Be Told, you know that one time, on a more lighter note, one time we said in my phone as public representatives, you know, officials must go and campaign. Go and listen to what our people are telling us. Because our people are not interested. They're not interested in this high-powered language that is declared in our. And ours, it's not because we are undermining the information or your intellect on the know-how. What is at the back of my mind? That, gosh, I will be staying here, we'll go out, we're told that in Kailicha, people are up in arms. We want the foreign nationals to be out, as it happens in each loop. In between all these processes that are formed, which are supposed to be there, what is it that is, or is that, maybe it's a question that you, ourselves also would raise with the ministry, that in between those, because we will sleep and wake up and find. You know, I have been watching Al Jazeera. I do 5 or 4 or 6. I do watch that. And she said, "Oh my God, this can happen. It's happening maybe in South Africa, but I'm not advocating. When you are to correct something, it's about time now that we stop being cynical, diplomatic. As much as we're not going to be naked, as much as we're not going to be arrogant, as much as we're not going to create a hostile environment between ourselves and ourselves, but now it's about time that we're alive. That's why I always say, even if we can politicize, we go up and fight, we have a political test as political parties, one day we will wake up and we won't blame. will blame ourselves for not being safe. Yes, government is trying to do a part in between. How do we ensure that together we try and bring hope to our people? So that's why the question was, in between these processes, what is it that we are to, you think that is to be done? And if maybe the question is, should I say unfair or is very, it's very political, it means a political discussion, we're in a workshop here. So the prof, he is going to discuss it, I make an example, he's going to go to his political party and say, this is Arile, she is going to go to his political party, we are going to go to our political party. Because at the end, it's not about us, it's not about me. It's about South Africa that wants everybody to be, to find, trying to mitigate this percentage that is going up. When we were told in our Lekhutla in the province about the high rate of unemployment, and what in the Eastern Cape, who is in the economic stream in terms of getting money, he said, oh my God. So there is in, maybe go and sleep over it, come back, in between all the things, Advocate Bono, that are being done, what is it that we are to do to our people to be in hope? What's coming in the ocean? Because what money does that there? No? Grant, all these grants, but we have got a number of them. Knowing very well that even the president, there are leaderships that but people up there, abandon the siblings. And they are going to be vulnerable. In me standing off, they are going to be vulnerable. Anybody who's good on this course, someone will interpret in a manyala. And a manyala in China is because people, it poverty needs people to fight among each other, not because they do want to do that, but really because they are hungry and they think that it's nothing that we are doing. So I thought maybe, don't be afraid, and I'm requesting to everybody who's making a presentation here on behalf of this committee, if there is something that you think you said, Chair, at an appropriate time, please allow us to inform you, Chair will take this to our principal. Chair will think that the committee is asking things that are impossible, were there in the sky. So feel free to tell us, so that as we move, everything, Galopu and Mr. Bono, is that Sipuma, that's what Honorable Mgwezi said, Sipuma perspective, but we. And people are asking us every day, not interested in the country, but living in the country, because we want to better their lives. And I just wanted to say that.
That's fine, Chair. I can imagine them saying, what you're asking for is a pie in the sky, and then it comes to account. But then to face the consequences. Of what he said today. So I think the chair is just expressing concern, and because of the work that the portfolio committee does in interacting with the public, you know, is raising the issues that are raised on the ground, and how department, what the department is doing in order to address those issues. So I don't know if you want to respond or, you know, just take the inputs and go back with them.
Migration is very important. You should see us in the AU and in the SADC. We like offended because of what happened in this discussion. I heard you very well, Chairperson, but I think we can give you an answer
Simon. Thank you for the presentation. Are you? Takes himself to jail. I'm not getting him out. He himself put himself behind bars, so he must report.
Can I protest? I think it's a choice of words, because different platforms may be when we are in a, among others, when we are in a formal committee, portfolio committee. But secondly, I think when we are political parties do have the right to interact with the departments through their structures. But we will hold him accountable, say, in the workshop, you said to him, because I think he's very intelligent and he's very diplomatic. Now the third was going to say, I'm taking this to our, I've had you, I'm taking this to our principals, I don't have, and then we will come back in appropriate time. In Nairobi, it shows better than the way. So, there's some of my good women in
the chair has spoken. Sam, you are protected. Yeah, the shots you are actually. Thanks. Thank you very much for the presentation. The chair asked that we interpret. So, we often put that when it deals with compensation. No. He's going to do that. I dish out orders. Let's then deal with the development process of APPs and strat plans. And whilst Ms. Kaba is coming up. Is the presentation up already? Oh, okay. Sure. Thank you. I think we also need to acknowledge on that point, Simon, from your presentation, the number of placements, the 109,122, you know, and the achieving and exceeding all the APP targets is noted and is commended. Nolcom.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good afternoon once more to the honourable members and colleagues. I am going to make a brief presentation on the process that we followed in the development of the annual performance plan for 2020-21 as well as the strategy plan for 2020-2025. And the table of contents reads as such. We will entertain the introduction, which is the management of performance information in the Department of Employment and Labour. When we talk about performance information, which is going to be a term that is going to be used frequently by the Auditor General as well as the Department, we talk about the strategy plan, the annual performance plan, as well as the monitoring and evaluation processes within government and in particular in the Department of Employment and Labour. Then we're going to talk about the purpose, why we do this, the process that we undertook as a department to develop this plan as well as the quarterly report as well as the development of the system itself and the APP. Can go to slide number 4, the introduction. The Department of Employment and Labour delivers on a number of services, some of them which have been highlighted by the DDG IES, the DDG PEP, Compensation Fund, UIF, and some of our public entities. This is essential to the well-being and development of the community. To ensure that our service delivery is efficient and economically possible, the department is required to formulate strategic plans as well as annual performance plans. so that we can allocate as scant resources for the implementation of this plan, monitor the implementation, and report the results. The reporting process takes place through our quarterly performance reports as well as our annual performance report. All these, they highlight the planning as well as the reporting tools that constitute performance information in government in general and in the Department of Labor in particular. Performance information is essential to focus the attention of the public and oversight bodies, Parliament being one of these, on whether the department is delivering value for money by comparing performance against budget so that we make sure we don't understand or we overspend. We look at service delivery plans, look at the challenges, and apply corrective action where it is required. Performance information also plays a growing role in budget allocation and is increasingly used to monitor service delivery. This means the information must be as accurate as we can make it to be, although this is not always the case, hence we find ourselves with audit issues around performance information. Make sure that the reports are appropriate and they are produced timely. This helps us to be able to measure the service delivery that we send for the communities out there. The purpose of managing performance information in the department in the next slide, which is slide number 5, we want to make sure that the predetermined plans, the objectives, the performance indicators and targets that are set by the department are constantly monitored and are successfully achieved in line with government. The purpose also is to provide the department with planning and reporting tools as well as procedures to monitor and evaluate the operations of the department and the mechanisms by which performance in the department can be improved. It is important that in the process of implementation we define roles and responsibilities, who is supposed to be doing what, and what are the timelines that we need to set ourselves in the execution of the mandate of the department. We are also conscious about the promotion of accountability and transparency, because at the end of the day, we have got to provide reports to our oversight bodies like Parliament, the Auditor General, and the general public out there. The information that we provide must be timely, accessible, and we must make it to be as accurate as we can. And this is all captured in our strategic plans, our APPs, our quarterly performance reports, as well as our annual performance reports. Slide number 6, we explore the linkages that we have in the execution of the mandate of the Department of Labor, starting with the constitutional obligation that we have as a department, as well as the policy mandate that was articulated by the DDGLP and IR this morning. To achieve the mandate of the department, the following linkages should be established. We have to link to the government program of action, which is the National Development Plan 2030, the medium-term strategic framework, which is a 5-year implementation plan, which recently is labeled the 5-year National Development Plan, which is derived from the National Development Plan 2013. This is then translated into the departmental strategy plans as well as annual performance plans. Linked to this process is the medium-term expenditure framework, which is the money that is allocated to the activities that we want to execute over the 5-year period. The link between the departmental strategy plan, annual performance plan, as well as the branch work plan has got to be very clear. This should cascade into the operational plans, or what we call the branch work plans, and it must be reported through the quarterly performance reports as well as the annual performance reports. The planning process in the department and its public entities is cascaded to the individual performance agreements that are signed by all in the department, right from the accounting officer to the lowest level employee in the department. So there is a distinct link between what individuals do at an operational level to what government at a higher level wishes to deliver to its population. The departmental planning, monitoring and evaluation guidelines and the performance information process laws also have a link. And these guidelines are derived from the policy of the department, the policy for managing performance information, which provides the same matching orders for everybody in the department so that we do things in a concerted manner. This process articulates how we do the planning process so that there is a uniform approach to how we do things. When are we supposed to submit reports so that we can make sure that reports are submitted timely? Also, there is a link between the governance structures of the department because they all provide an oversight role to the very planning process of the department as well as the reporting processes of the department. The governance structures of the department, they involve the executive committee of the department, which is comprised of the top management of the department, and that is chaired by the DG of the department. We have the departmental executive committee, which is comprised of the chief directors as well as the top management of the department. It is also chaired by the DG. That is at a national level. We have provincial executive committees in the various provinces of the department that are also responsible for oversight, as well as making sure that we implement according to what we have planned as a department. We also do have structures that are chaired by the Minister of the Department of Employment and Labour, where the Minister, as well as the Deputy Minister, they play an oversight role on what goes into the planning processes of the department, as well as the monitoring and evaluation of the reports about the performance of the department. We have an obligation to comply to the government prescripts that are applicable to performance information management, and these are provided to every government department by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, as well as the National Treasurer. So that as government also, we have a uniform approach to how we plan as well as to how we report against the plans that we formulate. Then, the next slide, we articulate the process that we followed in the development of the strategic plan for the next 5 years, as well as the performance plan for this for the coming financial year, which starts on the 1st of April 2020. It was quite an involved exercise, given that this is an election year, and there was a fresh mandate for government to execute. The process started with the environmental analysis as well as taking stock of the previous year's performance so that the department is in a position to set realistic targets for the 5 years ahead so that we don't bite more than we can chew as a department, so that we are also planned according to the resources that we have, as well as the budget constraints that are imposed on us by the National Treasury of the country. The process started off in June 2019, right after election, where the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation distributed the draft National Development Plan, which was a 5-year NDP, which we also know it as the medium term strategic framework, it is for the period of 2020-2025, which is in line with the sixth administration. Subsequent to the distribution of the 5-year national development plan by the DPME, this is what the Department of Labor did to make sure that we are aligned to the government's planning process, the mandate of the current administration, as well as the NDP 2030 document of the country. The department drafted the guidelines as well as the new framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans that were circulated to all the role players, that is the department, four branches, the public entities. That was done around the end of March 2019. These, I must also highlight that they were derived from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation as well as National Treasury. So we had to tailor make our own planning processes to those of government and customize them to suit our unique circumstances as a department. Subsequent to that, there was a meeting by the DG, the DDGs and the commissioners of the funds to discuss how the Department of Employment and Labour was going to contribute to the NDP MTSS for 2019-2024, and that meeting took place here in Cape Town on the 2nd of July 2019. Subsequent to that, we had a briefing of what was contained in the NDP MTSS, which I'm going to talk about later in this presentation. This briefing session was between the Office of the COO as well as the Department of Employment and Labour Fund, that is the UIF, the Compensation Fund, and the public entities. That was on the 5th of July 2019. The DEL 2-year strategic planning workshop to set the strategic direction of the department over the period 2020-25 took place on the 15th of July. There was participation by the ministry and the deputy ministry in this strategic planning session, where the minister provided insights as to what direction the department should take in order to be able to fulfill its new mandate. After that, there was the submission of the inputs of the department to the NDP MTSS 2025. That was signed off by the accounting officer and the executive authority, and these were submitted to the DPME. This is mainly captured in the strategic plan of the department as well as the APP, and more detail will be provided as the APP and strategic plan is presented to the committee after tabling in March 2020. The DPME planning, monitoring and evaluation workshop to train government departments on the new planning approach as well as the new M&E guidelines took place on the 13th of August, and there was a second session between the 4th and the 6th of September. There was a third session that took place in January 2020, which targeted internal auditors of the various government departments, because internal auditors got a responsibility to audit our strategic plans as well as APCs, and they have also to review and report on the reporting processes of the department and its public entities. This to ensure that there is integrity of information as well as accurate reporting by the department and its public entities. The process we followed is continued on slide number 8. The NDP MTSS document was submitted to DPME, and the planning guidelines as well as circular were distributed to all the DEL programs, the funds and the public entities. A draft framework of the strategic plan and annual performance plan was compiled, and this was circulated to the relevant branches and public The historical information of each branch was captured in line with the audited information from the previous annual reports of 2018-2019, as this information is important for setting the baseline that will launch the new strategic focus of the Department of Employment and Labour. This is important so that we make sure that we set correct targets that are in line with the capacity of the department to implement. The DEL programs, the funds, and the public entities submitted their drafts in turn to the Office of the COO for review, as well as comments in September 2019. This was an important process to make sure that we all have the same marching orders that are derived from the NDP MTSM 5-year plan. This was a rigorous review process that has got documented checklists that are provided, that have provided comments to the public entities as well as the funds on how they should align their planning processes to the government program of action, as well as the revised planning guidelines that were offered to government departments by the DPME. As well as the document that was compiled by the department, the NDP MTSF 2025 document that is owned by the Department of Employment and Labour, which is a contribution to the NDP document that encompasses the program of action for the government for the next 5 years. So this rigorous process was about making sure that we all move from the same page and we all have the same marching orders in terms of what the department wants to do over the next 5 years, and most importantly, this must be aligned to what government wants to achieve over the next 5 years. Whilst there were gaps identified during the initial review processes of the strategic plans of the department, the public entities, as well as the funds, by and large, there was compliance with the new DPME planning guidelines, as well as the Department of Employment and Labour NDP MTSS 2025 document, which in turn was aligned to the 5-year implementation plan that was derived by government through the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Each program and each public entity were provided with an opportunity to implement the comments and resubmit for a final review, which was finalized by November 2019. After this process, the Department of Employment and Labour Strategy Plan and APP were submitted to internal audit and the Auditor General for the last round of review, which is what we normally do every year when we undertake our planning process. This process is still underway and it should be finalized by the first week of February 2020. We are running behind this process by a week due to the delays in the submission of the comments by the CME, which you only on the planning processes of the department. The final DEL strategy plan and APP, including those of the public entities, will be signed off by the accounting officer and minister sometime in February 2020 and will be tabled in Parliament in March 2020. The detail of what is contained in this plan will be presented to the Portfolio Committee shortly after tabling in March 2020. The next slide is just a snapshot of what is contained in the NDP MTSF document that was provided by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, which articulates the 7 priorities that have been decided on by government as well as the ruling party, which were approved by cabinet sometime in October last year. This slide also articulates the goal statements of the Department of Employment and Labor, including its public entities, and how we link the department to the priorities of government, and who will be implementing what of those priorities of government. The department, out of the 7 government priorities that are in the NDC five-year plan document by the government, identifies 6 priorities that it is going to implement, and these are articulated in the slides and the next slide. Priority 1 is the economic transformation and job creation. We are the Department of Labor and Department of Employment and Labor. Therefore, this priority is very much applicable to the department, and it is for this reason that every branch of the department, as well as every public entity of the department, will have to play a role in the implementation of priority 1, which is economic transformation as well as job creation. The last column there, it shows the implementing branch stroke the implementing public entities. The column that is in the middle, it articulates the goal statements of the department that are going to assist the department to meet all the priorities of the NDP five-year plan that the department has identified for itself. Now, I must also say that these priorities are applicable to all government departments. They were cascaded from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation to all government departments and public entities in general. And this is how the department in particular has positioned itself in order to implement the mandate of the 6th administration over the next 5 years. We have priority 2, which is about education, skills and health. The goal statement of the department is to contribute to decent employment creation, which is about the entities that are articulated in the last column that is test will be leading the charge here, Productivity South Africa, the UIF and the Compensation Fund will be responsible for the implementation of this priority through the goal statement of contributing to decent employment creation through education as well as skills development. Our focus in the main as the department will be on skills development. The third priority identified by government is the consolidation of the social wage through reliable and quality basic services. The department's focus by the UIF, the compensation fund, and to an extent IS is to strengthen social security. And these are the 3 units within the department that are going to be responsible for the implementation of priority number 3. Priority number 5 is social cohesion and safe communities. The branch LP and IR will be implementing this priority, and their contribution in the main will be in the promotion of equity in the labor market. And this is largely about employment equity in the labor market. Priority number 6 is the capable, ethical, and developmental state. The goal statement of the department is to strengthen the institutional capacity of the department, and in the main, the branch that will be responsible for this is the administration branch of the department, which provides support services to the line functions in the department. This is a universal across the department as well as its public entities. The 7th priority will be the a better Africa and the world, and the department will contribute to this through the strengthening of multilateral as well as bilateral relations and the LPN, I am the implementing agent for this priority number 7. The last slide of my presentation articulates the various arms of implementation for the strategic plan as well as the APP. The representation that we have here is a branch representation at a national level, but we do have provincial offices that are responsible for the implementation of the programs of the department. We have got 9 provincial chief directorates in all. We have 126 labor centers, 492 visiting points, inclusive of 52 song services centers. We have got 40 satellite offices, all within the context of the service standards that are articulated to these 9 provincial chief directorates of the department. There's a service delivery improvement plan that helps the department to improve its service delivery, as well as budgetary planning and reporting so that we align ourselves with the budgetary principles of government. We have the annex chart, which is the draft annual performance plan 2021. This was for us to articulate the planning processes of the Department of Employment and Labour, or rather the process that was followed by the department in the development of the strategy plan as well as the APP. Within the context of the annual performance plan, the annual performance plan is not part of the brief, and I believe it will be presented to the portfolio committee after it has been tabled in Parliament during the first week of March. So for the purpose of this meeting, I will not entertain what is the detail that is contained in the annual performance plan of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let's take questions before we go to tea. Is there any? Yeah. It is those APP targets that the department would come and explain itself on. So I suppose the position is from the portfolio committee. We will wait for you. We will wait. Yes. ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Let's take tea. It's now 3:15. And we'll start at 3:30 with UIF Tebogo. You ready? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
which I mean,
that's
yeah,
make a huge impact.
I make a big noise about
you.
The noise of
boys.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
I say, can I ask you to close the door? It's your only task for today. Thank you, well done. Tebogo. Thank you. We may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was hoping I could survive the presentation. My voice is gone, so if it's gone in 5 minutes, you'll be able to.
As I tell the portfolio committee members that you wanted an hour, and you think your voice is gone.
Okay, Chair, I'll be quick. I'm going straight to slide number 3, Chair, without any waste of time. On this slide, the focus is on the vision, our mission, and the values that drives URF. I think, Chair, in the main, what URF does is what I've put the head of the value chain, our registration, declaration, contribution, claims, and then to our labor activation that we invest. Our registration process is informed by Section 56, 1 and 2, and then our declaration is Section 57, 1 and 2. So you can see that declaration and registration and declaration are informed by Section 56, 1 and 2. In the main, if I were to use an example, if you were to open a business tomorrow, our focus would be, do you have employees? If you have employees and your employees are working for you for 24 hours and more, then you must register for URF, get a registration number. Then at month end, if you pay them a salary, then you must declare that I have 2 employees and this is how much I'm paying them. And once you declare them, you must pay contribution, which is 2% of the salary. 1% is deducted from the employer and 1% is deducted from the employee. Oftentimes, employers like your domestic workers, they oftentimes contribute the 2% from their own money, while some employers are quite fond of their employees. Then I think the claims process, when Mr. Sifuli presented, he touched on the number of claims that we have as URF, so I'm not going to walk members through that once more. When people lose their jobs, we've introduced what we call the labor activation program, which then introduced URF beneficiaries to training programs. I think in my previous presentation when I was at the portfolio committee, I gave members a snapshot of one of our projects and gave it them. And I think in the next invitation, the portfolio committee said they'll invite us to present the whole scope of our project, which I'll do as part of quarter 3, some of the projects that we do, that members can have sight of some of the projects that we get involved in. But in the main, the chapter is just to retrain UI beneficiaries, reintroduce them back into workplace. And that links up with what Mr. Mrodoba spoke about earlier, about public employment services, where people are linked to job opportunities. And whether the job opportunities, but the skills are not there, then we introduce the relevant skills. And then we invest the difference via the PIC. That is defined then in the UI Contribution UI Act, but it's also part of the UI Contribution Act, where we introduce our funds to via the Public Investment Corporation. Just to give members a feel once more, as part of the development of the UI benefits, we introduced new benefits last year. Previously, people used to accumulate credits. For every 5 days you work, you accumulate 1 credit. We introduced an act that for every 6 days, no, previously it was 6 days, and now we reduce it to every 5 days you accumulate 1 credit. We've also improved the turnaround, the time that people had to apply for benefits. Previously it should be 6 months. And as a result, more people were declined and were not able to apply, especially people who were not aware or in the effect of a death benefit. Especially with black people, that sometimes when you lose your husband or you lose someone, you are confined to the house for a period. By the time you come back, URF says no. And now we've increased that time to 12 months, that people are able to apply now for a death benefit for up to 18 months. We've also improved our maternity benefit. Previously, it was a sliding scale with a maximum of 66%, a minimum of 20%. Now we're applying a fair rate of 66% across. across. The remainder of the part, Chair, is just an indication for us on what informs our target and how they link up to the Act. You see that we have a target for registration, we have a target for declaration, we also have a target for contributions, we have a target also for claims, we have a target for our labor activation, which speaks to the number of people that we take out for training, and then we also have a target for investment portfolio. In essence, what this slide shows is how our targets are linked up to the UI Act, so that we are not found non-compliant to the UI Act, Chair. In the next slide on page 4 is a reflection of the structure and how it flows. It starts with the minister, then you have the deputy minister and the director general, the UIF commissioner, then you have the chief director below. And also part of our structure is the UI board. It's an advisory board that advises both the director general and the minister on policy-related matters. On slide 5, Chair, on your left-hand side, it's a reflection of the process we follow when we put together a strategy plan. Sister Norikolo touched on it earlier, so I'm not going to repeat what she said earlier, Chair. I just go to the right-hand side of the slide. On the right-hand side of the slide, what we are showing, Chair, is UIF work is done in the provinces. About 95% of UIF processes happen in the provinces. They take applications, they obtain all the relevant documentation, they submit to processing sites, then payments are made, they process claims, they process payments, and they attend to any complaints. And all of this work is done in all the 9 provinces. We have 125 river centers where all this work is done. We also have an additional 820 visiting points. Now this is where the visiting points, where the volumes at the river center are much higher, and therefore we open visiting points across provinces where people can go and obtain services. Oftentimes the visiting points are open on a particular date, like the Tuesday and Thursday, and people are serviced on those days. The next slide, Chair, in brief, just a performance, the operational performance of UR in the past since 2014. We started off at 67%, took a dip up to 50% in 2016. I was appointed in December 2016, Chair. I'm not counting. But from 2017, you can see an uptick. And I'm hoping the uptick will continue for the rest of the year as a commission. On slide 7, what I want to show, Chair, earlier on I spoke about the benefit improvement. I just want to show the budget shift. We had initially, program 2 is our benefit payment. We had budgeted 5.9 billion rands up to this point for benefit payments. And you can see an improved benefit has now increased our benefit paid year to date to 8.6 billion rands, which shows that the opening up of the application time, the improvement of ordinary benefit from 6 months to 12 months, you can see the impact in the bottom line. But we have also increased budgets to accommodate more benefit being applied for. I think on this side, that's the effect I wanted to show to the committee, that there's been an impact on the benefits that we're paying out. Then in the next slide, Chair, what I'm going to show here is our investment portfolio. I think when I came previously, Chair, I also requested the portfolio committee that it might be prudent that one of the things we do for the committee is to walk them through our investment portfolio. But just to give you a feel, Chair, if you look at the breakdown of our portfolio, we have about 172 billion rands assets under management. And you can see we have nominal bonds are our bonds that we invested with government, or the bonds that we made available to government. And in those nominal bonds, you have the bonds that we've extended to your Eskom, your Sunray, IDC, and a number of state-owned entities. And what I just want to say to the committee is, UIF funds are not sitting chairpersons. The UIF funds are driving electricity that we have now. We've extended the bond there. We've also extended the bond to DINEL as part of our driving the economy. And that's where that these nominal bonds are sitting, that we extend to government, also to run. And then on slide 9, Chair, here I just want to give the feel to the committee on the impact of I've gone over my 10 minutes. On this slide, Chair, slide 9, what I'm showing is how the impact of our investment has been. If you look on the left side of the document, 51,000 jobs were preserved by the investment portfolio to date. Oh, next slide. What I want to show the Chair is the total number of jobs sustained year to date is 51,000, part of the investment that we're doing as URF. And I think these are some of the things that maybe we need to report more as URF on some of the impacts we are making. If we look at the education piece, we've contributed to 25,000 students that are able now to study. Now these are the students that are not accommodated by NEFSAS, because NEFSAS go up to 350,000, and students above that, they need to find ways to go to school. And that's where the investment comes in terms of students. We're also investing in student accommodation. With more students having to go to university or to technical colleges, there's a need for student accommodation. We've invested in that. On the right-hand side, Chair, I think the first part is the PIC. It's a repeat of what I said earlier. Then the next part of IDC, with any investment portfolio, the 9,400 jobs have been created year to date via the PIC investment, the IDC investment. Then with EDCON, if you recall, last year February, the URF participated in the saving of EDCON. We were able to save over 140,000 direct and indirect jobs. Once again, Chair, it's part of the investment portfolio of URF Educational. And then the next slide is combined assurance. This was just us showing that we are taking both strategic risk and the Auditor General matters serious, and that we are implementing. And we just wanted to show the portfolio committee that there's a focus on our risk portfolio, that we identify strategic risk. And at the time of preparing this report, it already implemented 28 of the 4 of the risk identified. We are already making progress with the Auditor General findings, and also the internal audit function is functioning optimally. I'm not picking up any issues. With the disruptors, we did talk about the USSD previously. I think the one I want to lift up today, Chair, is the mobile buses that on the 31st of March 2020 will be introducing the first bus. We've already appointed the service provider. They started. The first bus will be available to go to the rural of the rural to go and provide services there. And then the one area I want to lift up again, Chair, is the temporary employer-employee release scheme. Year to date, we managed to save 33 companies, preserved 3,800 jobs. And these are the people that we have lost jobs, have not intervened in the temporary employer-employee release scheme. Totally 120 million rand that has been spent. And now, this 120 million rand could have been spent in either paying claims, where we would have paid for claims and people that go and sit at home. Whereas this time around, we spend 120 million rand to keep people employed. And then we keep them employed, they continue to pay to contribute to UIF, they contribute to CHEP, they also contribute to the general economy overall, CHEP. And then on the next page, in some of the interventions that we put in place, or some of the success areas that we've introduced is the turnaround time from 35 days, now it's 15 days. Our collection continues. I think last year we closed at 19 billion rands. We've reviewed the act, I think I've touched on that, and we're implementing the job summit resolutions. One of the things that we still need to clean up as URF is our more improved integration with the public employment services, such that when the person loses a job, they're able to link up with the opportunities available at PERS. And if there's no match with the opportunity, there's a training intervention available to train the person and lift them up, and also we're able to pay them with these jobs. I'll stop at that, Chair, for now, and maybe others will clarify the questions. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to ask a technical question. What are your fund's obligations in the event of retrenchments taking place at a state-owned enterprise like SAA? And would you have enough money in the kitty to cover any such obligations?
State-owned entity, our approach is we treat them like any other contributor to the UIF. Case in point, South African Airways contributes, Eskom contributes, Dinero contributes, as an example. Now, if they were to fall into an opportunity where people would get fired, or even Telkom, people were to lose their jobs, we did an actuarial evaluation to determine if in the event of a worst case scenario, will you be able to afford to pay the benefits? And we've done that, and yes, we'll be able to afford to pay the benefits. Let me share. Anything in the question? Well, in terms of job preservation, we have a temporary employee relief scheme. We also have a high social impact fund that we introduced at the time of ECOM. Now, the High Impact Social Fund has strict rules and is applied by PSC, where they apply their own investment instrument to test if a company has a turnaround plan. And they also look at the different permutations leading to us investing in ECOM. They will do the same should an opportunity arise for us to intervene at either South African Airways or ECOM or DINET. And same applies also with our temporary employer-employee relief scheme. It has rules that are applied each time a company applies, and we'll subject them to the similar rules. Should they pass the rules, they'll enjoy the benefits of either one of the interventions that are available.
Just
Yeah.
I was under the impression that a workshop managers would really understand what is a workshop, what is the intent of a workshop within the context of your work. Not unless that's how workshops are conducted in the department. It's very clear. We want what we know about UIF, we want to be more empowered. So that when we go out here, we don't run a risk of saying the same thing coming to the presentation. So that's what I'm saying. Your name is fine, but for the workshop, I'm standing.
Thanks, Chair. Can I just maybe ask one basic question? You obviously might have a response, which is, I suppose, one of the basic issues that we grapple with. I'm also a senior commissioner at the CMA, and I know that on a number of incidents, particularly with retrenchment, I've had to deal with a case where employees say UIF is deducted, but it's deducted. It's paid into, employers will say we paid into SARS, and but when you check with the department says we don't have records of the payment. I think I've simply dealt, I can safely say, with more than 20 cases. Where the problem has been consistent, where employees are now saying we're going to be retrenched and we're not sure if we're going to get our benefits, because when we go to the Department of Employment and Labour, we're told the employer is not contributing, and the employer says, I have proof that I'm paying to SARS. So, it's just one issue that I thought maybe we... that suddenly on the ground we will be asked this. So maybe we can get some assistance in that regard. The issue of entities operating inside the chair, I want Sam to deal with it. Remember, Sam, we have that arrangement that tomorrow in closing you will address some of the overarching issues between the entities. So maybe you can deal with that tomorrow too.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, I think I'm going to keep the fellow people. It's in Mr. Rotoba's board. I take, Chair, the high powered presentation. I think I wasn't too sure at what level I must pitch it. As you can see, there's a busy slide where I was reflecting sections of the Act. And I wasn't sure if I should maybe specify and go into the depth that is section 56, 1 and 2. Should I maybe write them down or should I just leave them out? So I'm not too sure, Chair. So it's understandable the view expressed by the chairperson. It's possible that it's too high. It was just me trying to moderate between too much detail and too little. I think next time I'm doing much better. Chair, with respect to the deduction of SARS, SARS employer, SARS deduct both UIF tax and other deduction, then they pay to UIF directly. Then the employers every month they send declarations to UIF. Then UIF does an alignment where we are able to reconcile what SARS has paid to us against what has been declared to UIF. And then declarations then link up what has been paid against specific employees. Now quite often employees will declare 100 rands. Now, employees will declare 100 rands for 100 employees. But when they pay to SARS, they are 320 rands. Or sometimes they pay 80 rands. Now, when it's above, it's easier to link, because you can almost work it out. But when it's below, now you don't know which of the employees must leave out when you're doing the declaration, when you're matching declarations against the contribution. But what we don't do, though, Chair, is we don't disadvantage employees when they lose their jobs. They come and apply, we process their claims, and then we tackle the employee via the inspectorate so that the contributors are not disadvantaged, provided they can provide a credible proof that they're employed. and on the basis of that, then work on their claims.
Injury or a person contracting an occupational disease. In the next slide, the compensation fund, there was, I think the acting DG, when he was talking, he spoke about the ILO convention. In the next slide, Madam Pepper. So the compensation for occupational injuries and diseases complies with all the ILO conventions that relate to occupational injuries and diseases. So this is just a list of those conventions. South Africa as a country has ratified 2 of the conventions, and there are about 5 of them that have not been ratified, but complying and exceeding the requirements that are in the convention in terms of the making sure that the vulnerable workers are covered, as well as the benefit types that we provide in the event of occupational injury and disease are covered. In the next slide is just a vision of the compensation fund. We may be where we are now, but our vision is to be a world-class provider of sustainable compensation for occupational injuries and diseases. Up until a few years ago, the vision ended at diseases. We've, in the last 3 years, added rehabilitation and reintegration as part of our contribution to making sure that those that are injured get reintegrated back into the labor market. In the next slide, at a high level, Chair, this is the if you look at the strategy of the compensation fund in one slide, this just summarizes the key strategic objectives: to provide fast and reliable and accessible quality services by 2020, and to provide an efficient and effective client-oriented support service to the core business of the fund. So this is what our strategic plan over the last 5 years has been. We are now developing a new strategic plan for the next 5 years. And there is a list of some of the things that we've been able to achieve in pursuance of the strategic plan that we have for ourselves. In the next slide, it just explains what, how the compensation fund is structured and what we do. Prof. Singh spoke at length about the governance structure of the public entities, and we are a public entity that has an advisory board, and she spoke about what are the obligations and responsibilities of the advisory board. If I focus only on the three pillars that are on the slide, the core business of the compensation fund is divided into three units. The compensation and pension benefits unit, which focuses then on providing, on making sure that when a person gets injured in the workplace, a person will have access to three types of benefits. Maybe 2 of those benefits at a time, or all 3 of the benefits at a time. So in terms of compensation and pension benefits, if a person gets injured, they would then qualify for temporary disability payments if the person's injury or the disease that he or she has contracted would result in the person getting back into employment after the period of treatment, then they would qualify for short-term temporary benefits. We also reimburse the salaries that the employer would pay in the time that the person may be off work to treat the injuries. Some people may not be fortunate enough to get back into employment, and those that are then deemed to be permanently disabled would also then qualify for over and above permanent disability payouts. They would then also qualify for a pension that they would get from the compensation fund for the remaining life, for their remaining life. And in an event that they succumb to the injuries after some time, after having received being in receipt of pension, their beneficiaries will then continue, provided they are of school going age, they will still then continue to enjoy the pensions that we pay out to them. We also then pay for the cost of the medical aid to treat the injuries that the worker would have sustained. And also, 2 years ago, we introduced the rehabilitation and disability care, where we then saying that over and above paying for the medical treatment, we then also want to play a role in rehabilitating a person. 3 forms of rehabilitation that we focus on: clinical rehabilitation for making sure that the person gets back to a healthy state. We also then introduced social rehabilitation, because some of the people would be such that they need to be assisted to reintegrate back with their families, to reintegrate back with the community. So we then use social programs to try and help reintegrate and rehabilitate people so that they can get back into their communities. We then also do vocational rehabilitation, where we help reskill the injured workers. Oftentimes, the person may not be able to get back into employment in the same job that he or she was doing, but if we help to reskill the person, we then help the person to be able to get back into the labor market in a different capacity. Some of the people also may be able to get back with better skills and better qualifications that enable them to be able to further advance in their career. The next slide is just the, then it's just all those benefits that I had highlighted. If you go to the slide about funding, which would be my last slide. Next slide. Yes. So as a compensation fund, we are funded from levies that we collect from employers. We use a risk-based system. An employer who registers to the compensation fund can be classified in one of the 102 different subclasses that we categorize employers in, and each subclass will then have its own risk profile, and depending on the risk profile, we determine the rate that the employer would then pay for this. There was a question asked earlier on, and also the question that was raised just now when the UIF was presenting. The first question in the morning was the linkage between OHF and compensation fund, as well as the issue of the silo operations. So the, if you look at the Occupational Health and Safety Act, as well as the compensation for occupational injuries and diseases, is one typical example of two pieces of legislation that complement each other in terms of making sure that we prevent workplace injuries, and if in an event that the workplace injuries could not be prevented, then we have a compensation mechanism for making sure that the people that are injured still continue to enjoy the quality of life that they had not before. A typical example is that there is a Section 85 of the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act, for example. It talks about employers who may qualify for reduced assessments, provided that they can demonstrate that they developed and implemented systems that are aimed at preventing occupational injuries and diseases, so which ties back to what the OHS does. So if you can prove that you have all those mechanisms in place, and as a result, the number of occupational injuries and diseases that have been reported by the employer are much less than those comparable to the industry or even in prior years, then a person like that then gets incentivized to pay a lesser assessment rates, which then incentivizes employers to make sure that they keep the workplaces safe so that they can then qualify for some of these rebates that we provide. I would stop my presentation. The rest of the presentation just I think gives information that the committee is already aware of, the chair has already indicated.
And those mosquitoes?
It's not the mosquitoes, but the information that you
showed. Chair?
No, Chair. I would have thought that the commissioner would also just inform the committee, because it's not a surprise that they are in front of the SCOPA. They have been called to SCOPA, and they are trying their level best to address some of those, so that the members, obviously, at an appropriate time, we will then get that that detailed report from the department to the office of the from the ministry or the DG. So I thought just to, it's not that our account, this is the workshop. But the actual accounting is when then we are in, so that members do understand. And let me take this opportunity that if there are, again, because we did circulate a menu to our members, if there are, again, if any of our entities are called to SCOPA, members avail themselves so that you are empowered on what then is transparent there. But I just wanted just to reflect that maybe it was just an omission from this side.
Any concerns, comments on the presentation?
And the work that you do is very important, and you've laid out the basis thereof. If there are no questions, then I must just thank you for the presentation. The presentation is much appreciated, and I think you've dealt with it simply in a very good way. So thank you. Thanks a lot for you. I was hoping there was going to be questions so that I can go and caucus with the chair. Now I can't caucus with the chair and start closing these proceedings without the correct authority. There's one person chair that I won't name that we were getting an agreement to bring them today, but the change of hearts, so we'll keep them for tomorrow. But won't say who that is. Why are you looking at Nandi? Chair, let me hand over to you and you can take it from here.
No, I think it has been in welcoming Honorable Montrelli, who will introduce himself. We did tender his apology. He will join us tomorrow, the whole day, and the other 2 members that are coming in. I do think that it has been quite an informative session. Safe to say to those that are coming tomorrow, please, good people, this is not a portfolio committee meeting, a workshop of the portfolio with the department. So try to make us understand, we will make you understand where we are coming from, so that as you will then be moving forward tomorrow. I want to, in future, because now that we are starting our term, which is the 6th administration, but I want to also make a proposal that maybe to, so that, thank you very much, Advocate Bono, for facilitating. Tomorrow you will still be with us. I would want to request that maybe you recap tomorrow on then, and then tomorrow you will also then share with us your expertise, what as members we must watch, and so that we are able to understand some of these things, which some of them are very complex. As I said, when we opened that labor is about law. There's no other two ways. It's about law, and if we don't master that within the context of being activists and politicians, we will go on each other's toes, which we haven't done. But then there is that understanding, and that understanding from the department that in fact they have got constituencies that they must go and report to, which are asking them questions. Then we must empower them. So we are both empowering one another. But it was quite an informative session, and thank you very much for steering the ship to the right direction.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to everyone who's here. But as I close off, Chair, just one comment or that story that I'd like to apply. last year, I think around August, September, at the university where I also work, a student, PhD student, came to do her oral, which happens to be one of the Parliament Council secretaries. And she is right, she's doing a PhD on the effectiveness of labor laws in the country. And after the whole presentation which she made, the debate moved from just what the labor laws have or are contained of, but the debate was why the critique on some of the labor on some of the labor laws, and whether there should be more laws made, or should we rather make the ones that we have more effective. I'm raising the point, it was quite interesting. I mean, we spoke about, we started the morning with the issue of assessment. Is there an impact assessment? And I liked Eggie's presentation, which deals with inspection and enforcement. Because maybe really we should master the enforcement of the ones that we have and stop always creating new things without first ensuring that the pieces of legislation that we have, whether it's the Skills Development Act or the Employment Act, that is fully functional, it's efficient, it's effective, it's doing the work that it is meant to do and so forth. But maybe I will share the thesis when it's done with the portfolio committee. But I think it's clearly an independent assessment of all. Ladies and gentlemen, see you tomorrow, those who will be coming back. Those who will not be joining us tomorrow, safe flights. See you tomorrow. Thank you for everybody's participation, and thank you to the